GameZillaMedia.com.
It's time for the Last Action Podcast!
Pop quiz, hotshot!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker!
I feel the need for speed!
If speeds, we can kill it.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Come with me if you want to live.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Last Action Podcast. I am LPJ, and I'm joined by a man who put himself in a seven-year coma just to grow a shitty beard. Hovercraft Joe.
How dare you, LPJ? My beard is
No, it looks great now. I'm just saying, the one you grew during the coma, your coma beard, wasn't great. It was a weird Fu Manchu thing going on. It was kind of racist. I didn't like it.
I wish I could go in a coma now and then we'd be done making the podcast.
Wow, way to poop on the podcast, man.
Listen, kidding.
No one's forcing you to be here.
I know. Well, kind of. I feel like you kind of are.
That's probably partly true.
Remember when I joined the podcast as a guest host?
Yeah, that was
200 episodes ago.
Yep.
Anyways, okay, so we're talking this episode about Hard to Kill, our old friend Steven Seagal. And this movie is released February 9th, 1990. Again, and I feel like, other than Under Siege, I feel like when we did, what was it, Above the Law. Same kind of thing. Like, I haven't seen really any of these Steven Seagal movies. Like, I had never seen this one. You gave me a list of like three movies.
Yeah,
I did. Pick.
And you and picked, I picked this one. I was like,
and you were surprised.
I was like, this is not the one I expect you to pick.
To be fair, one of them was Beastmaster. I don't remember what the third one was. So, like, but I think I was just kind of curious to watch this. But I have no background with this movie. Like, this is my first time ever watching it. So
yeah, the reason I suggested this is because, you know, we're just kind of going in order as far as like the release dates of Steven Seagal's movies. So this is the second of the Steven Seagal movies that was released. And for whatever reason, I thought this is the one I had seen, and it is not.
Have you seen the one where he like battles like a Jamaican gang or something?
That's the one I saw.
That's the one I want to watch. I've never seen it,
What the hell is it called? I need to look it up. Cannot for the life of me think of the name of it now. But that is the one. That's the one I thought.
There's like two other ones that he made before.
Mark for Death. Yeah.
And then I think what's the other one? There's like four that he made before Under Siege, and we did.
They're all three letter words. So we did.
We did Above the Law. This is Hard to Kill. Yeah. What'd you say? The
Mark for Death.
And then it's Out for Justice.
Out for Justice, then Under Siege. Like these three movies, Above the Law, Hard to Kill, Marked for Death, all came out within 16 months of each other. And then Out for Justice wasn't that far behind. It was 91. But these first three movies came out like back to back to back.
This is your first time seeing the movie. You don't have any history with it.
I don't. No, I thought I had, but it turns out I'd seen Marked for Death.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. This movie has a budget of $11.5 million and goes on to gross $47 million. So pretty successful.
Yeah, I mean, he's not making expensive movies and they're making money, so they're gonna keep on making them.
Rotten Tomatoes for Hard to Kill is 33%, which is low, but much higher than the 9% that Beverly Hills Cop 3 has, and obviously higher than the 0% that Death Warrant has, which, spoiler alert, also came out in 1990.
Yep.
And then the audience score for Hard to Kill is 47%, so just almost 50%, just a little bit lower.
That seems about right for the audience.
Seems about right. Okay. Top grossing movies of 1990, and buckle up, we need to stop doing movies from 1990. Okay, so the top three movies domestic box office for 1990 are number one, Home Alone, number two, Ghost, And number three, Dances with Wolves. This movie, Hard to Kill, comes in 25th. Get ready. Other movies we have covered from 1990 are number five, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Number six, The Hunt for Red October. Number seven, Total Recall. Number eight, Die Hard 2. Number nine, Dick Tracy. Number 16, Bird on a Wire. Number 28, RoboCop 2. Number 30, Young Guns 2. Number 36, Darkman. Number 38, Predator 2. Number 50, Navy SEALs. Number 70, Death Warrant. And number 71, Tremors.
Wow, 90. 90 is a blockbuster year for this podcast.
That is insane. We need to stop doing movies from 1990.
And some of those movies are so good, and some of those movies are so bad.
Where does this one fall? We'll find out. Okay, so as far as the cast of this movie, obviously Steven Seagal. The only person I really noticed or knew of was Kelly LeBrock, who was, I believe, married to Steven Seagal.
Yeah, at the time, right? She got married to him in like 88, which I didn't think. I thought they got married like on this movie because he sexually harassed her enough to get him get married. But it turns out she was already married, and she had retired from acting at this point and only came back to do this movie because he asked her to.
And it makes sense that they were married because they have like a sex scene, but there's no like nudity in it. No. It's like,
well, yeah. There's no nudity in the other sex scene too, and he has a move. Like you could tell he's got the cup of boob little twist move in both scenes. The exact same motion.
That's his go-to.
Yeah. The boob cup twist.
Anybody else you want to talk about in the cast?
William Sadler's in this. William Sadler is in Die Hard 2. He plays the bad guy in Die Hard 2, like the head bad guy in it. Not the Cuban guy, but the other bad guy. He's also Death in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. So he's been in a bunch of different things. He's the senator. He's Senator Vernon Trent.
Well, I know who he plays in this, yeah.
Dean Norris is a sergeant in here. Dean Norris is in Breaking Bad. He's Walt's brother-in-law.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And that's pretty much it.
Okay. Net worth. I got two for you. You ready?
Yes.
First up, Kelly LeBrock. She's got that sweet, sweet, weird science money. What do you think for Kelly LeBrock?
She got that sweet, sweet Woman in Red money. the great Dudley Moore film. I'll go $10 million.
$10 million on the button, really? LPJ.
Wow. I was being hopeful for her. All right, good job, Kelly LeBrock.
Next up, Steven Seagal. He's got that sweet, sweet. What was that movie we did with him and Ja Rule?
Oh, Exit Wounds?
No, that was him and DMX.
Oh, sorry.
the one with him and Ja Rule, and they were in prison.
I don't know.
It was really bad.
They're both really bad. I don't know.
I'll say he's got that sweet, sweet Exit Wounds money, and I'll try and think of what the other one is.
He's got that sweet, sweet Russian rubles money, which isn't a movie. He just literally has money from Russia. I'll go. This is tough because I don't really know. I know he made a bunch of money on Bitcoin too, which is weird. I'm going to go. I'll go $15 million.
So close. It's $14 million for Steven Seagal. And the movie I was trying to think of is called Half Past Dead.
Half Past Dead. Yep.
All right. Do you got anything on the writer and director for this?
Nothing on the writer. Like, I couldn't find a thing on him. The director, Bruce Malmuth, didn't really do much. Remember Karate Kid?
Yes.
Remember the ring announcer? Probably not. This is him. The director is the ring announcer in Karate Kid 1 and 2.
Like in the original?
In the original Karate
Kid. All-Valley Karate Tournament?
Yes, and the second one. Other than that, he hasn't really done much. Like, He directed a movie called Nighthawks and The Man Who Wasn't There. And he's acted in a couple things that I have no idea, I haven't heard of. And that's it. Like, he didn't, he directed one more movie after this in 94 with Dolph Lundgren called Pentathlon. And other than that, nothing.
Oh, okay.
That's it. Yeah. Good. I got right. Nothing on this guy.
All right. Hold on. Let's talk about the taglines. You ready?
Yeah.
This first one is too much. He's L.A. Detective Mason Storm. P.S. Steven Seagal's character name is Mason Storm in this movie. He's L.A. Detective Mason Storm. Three hired assassins left him for dead, and he's waited 7 years to even the score.
Okay.
Did he wait 7 years, or was he in a coma for 7 years?
It kind of wasn't his choice.
Okay. The star of Above the Law is back. Now, Steven Seagal is hard to kill. And this last one is confusing because I think it's referencing his character from Hard to Kill, from Above the Law. It says, Nico's back. And this time, he's even more harder to kill.
Yeah.
Is Nico his character in the first one? Law?
Yeah.
That is a really weird tagline.
Maybe they wanted this to be a sequel? I don't know.
Did you see that this is the first movie that his, quote, iconic ponytail makes an appearance?
Yes. I do know that. Ugh. Iconic, right?
Well.
So, first of all, Mason Storm. This was going to be a series of movies, wasn't it? A bunch of Mason Storm movies. It had to be. That is the name of somebody who they wanted to make a collection of movies for.
You think?
Oh, 100%. Mason Storm is back in Rising Storm.
Anything else you want to mention before we start talking about the plot?
No, I couldn't find much on this as far as, like, production goes. I know that they didn't particularly, the writer and the director and Seagal didn't particularly get along very well.
Right. I saw that. It just seems like that's kind of because Steven Seagal's an asshole.
Yeah, it's basically, yeah, that's what it boils down to. That then all the sexual harassment allegations that kind of plague him throughout his entire career till currently. So, I mean, there is that.
We should do a Wheel of Pain that's just straight to video Steven Seagal movies sometime.
No, I don't know. That's
okay. Straight to video Van Damme, Steven Seagal, and Dolph Stone Lundgren. Cold Steve Austin.
Steve Austin. We'll see. We can do straight to video Wheel of Pain.
Ooh, that'd be a good one. That'd be a good one. Anyways, okay, so let's get into the plot of this film. It starts off in 1983, Los Angeles. So Steven Seagal is doing surveillance with the clunkiest looking video camera. It was like, okay, when LPJ and I were in like early high school, late middle school, and making like movies, you know, like we'd make our own movies, you know, and LPJ had this huge video camera that you put a whole VHS tape in. That is basically what Steven Seagal has in this scene.
No, but it's worse. He's got that. Plus, he has an audio tape recorder around his neck so he can just get the audio, right? Because, like, he's got the video camera so he can get the video, but he's got this parabolic dish microphone connected to an audio recorder so he can get the audio separately. It was a whole thing.
It's like he's like hiding behind like it's I was legit laughing this early because it's like he's supposed to be sneaky and he's got so much equipment.
Yeah, and he's not quiet talking to the person he's talking to, like, because is he radio in to somebody?
No, that's afterwards.
Oh, okay.
So
he wasn't being quiet.
No. So he's spying on this guy at the time. We don't know, the senator. I guess he's not a senator at this point, but he's talking to these like underworld guys, and he's trying to get this other senator bumped off so he can basically take his place.
Right.
He's talking to this guy named Calabrese.
Yep.
And he wants him to kill the senator. And like Seagal is like, has been doing like investigation on this Calabrese guy, and that's how he happens to catch this guy.
Yeah, because they have no idea that the senator is even there. Like, they have nothing on the senator. They're just following Calabrese as part of this investigation, and the senator happens to be there making a deal for them to kill the other senator.
Right. Well, I don't think he's a senator. I think he's not like
a senator. He's like a congressman or a...
Not a congressman. No, he's some kind of local like politician.
Right.
Anyways, so he makes too much noise, and they hear him because he's super loud and his hiding spot isn't great. But he takes off, he gets in his car and he drives off, right? So he calls into his the police station and talks to like, I don't know, like his partner or someone he trusts there at the mm-hmm. police station. But there's this like really like ham-fisted scene. You see these crooked cops and they like pick up the phone.
Yeah, they pick up the other end because obviously all the phone lines there are connected to one another. They're not dedicated phone lines for each person.
Right. So they listen in and they hear Steven Seagal talking about what he witnessed and how he is it on tape and all this stuff. So then Steven Seagal stops at like a party store to buy some champagne. And I feel like this scene was added in because they're like, there's not enough action sequences in this movie. Right. We gotta add in like one more action sequence. Cause he's in there to buy some champagne and he's like talking with the store owner. And then these like punks, this gang show up to rob it. And they kill the shop owner. And then Steven Seagal like beats the shit out of him. But I feel like there's really no reason for the scene to exist other than like,
it's to introduce the fact that Steven Seagal is a badass, quote unquote, and fill time.
Yeah.
Oh, and they have to explain why he shows up with champagne at his house later.
Yeah, that's it. So then Steven Seagal goes home. He sees his wife and his kid. He goes to the Bone Zone with his wife. But then some bad guys show up into the house.
He's got to go in. He's got to sit. He's got to pray with his kid.
He says that I'm not religious, but they do that thing that like, what's it called? It has a name, that prayer that they do.
I don't remember the name of it.
If I die before I wake.
Yeah. The thing in the Metallica song.
Yeah, clearly.
You understand, man.
You should remember more than me.
I don't. I really don't.
Well, anyways, so yeah, he prays with his son.
Right, and then he talks to his wife, and they're like celebrating because he's got the champagne. He's celebrating because he's got Calabrese and this other person, and yeah, and then they go to the Bone Zone. And then he does the cup and twist, and yeah, yeah.
So then the bad dudes show up. And these are all crooked cops, question mark?
Yeah, these are two of the crooked cops that were listening on the phone and another one.
Right. So they shoot him. They kill his wife. And then I was kind of confused about... I mean, okay. They don't kill his kid.
Right, he runs off. The kid runs off.
The kid jumps out the window, and I thought it was pretty clear that they didn't kill the kid. But then, like, throughout a lot of portion of the movie, they act like they did kill the kid. So I was like, did I miss? Did they shoot the kid and they just didn't want to show it? I mean, he's not dead. Like, they didn't kill the kid.
No,
but I feel like they left it kind of ambiguous. And then they were like, oh, yeah, the kid's dead.
Explain later on that his friend,
O'Malley
basically, like, paid off some... coroner to pronounce him dead so we could hide him.
Right, because the kid jumped out the window and what we find out is that he escaped and like ran to O'Malley's house. But like it's really ambiguous in the movie at the point because it's like they shoot at him and he jumps out the window and I was like, well, is he dead? And they just not want to show a kid getting like
right
shot in the movie, and it was confusing to me, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So also they go and they kill the guy, his cop buddy that he was talking to on the phone.
Yes. Yep.
But we should mention that Steven Seagal, he has like, he has the tape in his like,
in his coat pocket. So like it's when he came
I guess
home.
I guess he doesn't go to the Bone Zone because he never takes off his jacket.
No, they're about to, and then that's when they come in. But yeah, so okay. when he gets home, he had taken the tape of the audio of the surveillance, stuck it in his jacket pocket, and left the coat in the kitchen or somewhere, like where the champagne was or whatever.
No, that's not what happens, because he has the coat on in the hospital, because that's when O'Malley gets the tape. He takes it off.
Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah, sorry. He's got the coat on.
Also, he hides the videotape, like, in the wall somewhere.
Yeah, in the wall, like, next to the fridge or something. He's got some kind of weird hiding spot for it. Then where was I going with that?
I don't know
either. They take him to the hospital.
You gonna take him to the plot? Please do. Damn it. Okay, so they go to the hospital and O'Malley's there, and then the doctor comes out and he's like, "Ooh, bad news! Steven Seagal's dead."
And the hospital's filled with a bunch of corrupt cops and O'Malley.
Yes, so they come out and they tell O'Malley and everyone, they're like, "Ooh, Steven Seagal's dead," and they're like, "Ugh," but then like it was so weird because it was like then they're like, "Ooh, you know what? Our bad, he's not dead."
Yeah, then another guy comes out, another doctor comes out, and they're like, "Oh yeah, your buddy's not dead."
Yeah. So O'Malley's like, "Hey, don't tell anyone he's not dead." Like, because he knows that the crooked cops are trying to kill him. So he's like, "Don't tell anyone he's not dead. As far as you know, he is dead."
Yep.
Yeah. So we see kind of like a montage where we find out that the senator that Trent wanted to kill is dead. He died in a plane crash, and that Trent becomes a senator.
Yep.
And now we're in 1990. It's 7 years later, and Steven Seagal is in a coma.
Yeah, and they were really pushing that it was 1983 with the whole Oscars thing. Like,
oh my gosh, yeah. Like, because Steven Seagal, like, when he's got this giant surveillance equipment, he's like, "Oh, missing the Oscars for this?" And then when he calls his cop buddy's watching the Oscars.
Yeah, it is really weird.
It's like, oh, okay, you're being pretty specific about this. So, okay, so he's in a coma. Kelly LeBrock is his nurse that works, like, in this coma unit. She's, like, talking to him, and she randomly, like, pulls out a cat.
Yeah, a kitten. Like, not even a cat. It's like a very, very young kitten.
Yeah. And then she also looks at his dick.
Yeah, it was weird.
Which is like, and we're supposed to believe that his dick is so big that a dude who's in a coma for 7 years and still giant? Like, come on. Like, no. So, he wakes up from his coma.
Although I will say this, now knowing they were married at the time, it's a lot less creepy.
I'm not saying it's creepy. I'm just saying it's like,
oh no, I thought it was creepy. I thought it was one of those things where Steven Seagal wrote that into the part himself to make her say it. And then they got married, but no, they were actually married at the time. And then she said it. So I was also, I'm less creeped out now by it.
Presumably the way the movie presents it is that like every day she's kind of like, look at this dick.
Yeah. Just to make sure it's still there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't fall off as part of the side effects from this coma.
So she calls the police to tell them that Steven Seagal is awake.
He's a John Doe. So he doesn't even have a name. He's a John Doe in the hospital.
But like, I think O'Malley left a card.
They left an emergency contact card for him.
Right. So she calls, but O'Malley's no longer with the police.
Yep.
When she calls. And obviously the crooked cops hear this because they're still waiting around.
Well, what I can't figure out is, like, they all think he's dead.
Right.
Why would they think that this person calling, they immediately think it's Steven Seagal.
Right.
Like, immediately. Why would they think that? I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. Like,
I don't have an answer for you because in theory, they all think, you said, they think he's dead, so they wouldn't be on the lookout. And it's not like she's like, hey, Mason Storm woke up from his coma.
Some John Doe woke up from a coma, oh, and they're calling O'Malley about it. That's weird. And it's 7 years later. Why would they even, I don't understand why they would even think it's Mason Storm. But they immediately get on the phone like, hey, boss.
Right. So they send a bad guy out there. He's disguised as a doctor. He murders a security guard. And then, like, I have a note that's like, why did this guy wait so? Like, so at one point, like, Steven Seagal wakes up and he's hanging out with his, like, physical therapist. And, like, the crooked doctor, the fake doctor, it, like, murdered the security guard. And he's watching, like, this guy and Steven Seagal, like, walk down the hallway for, like, a long time. And I'm like, why didn't he just shoot Steven Seagal?
Right.
Because, like, the physical therapist guy comes over because he sees the doctor, the guard on the ground. He's like, oh, what's going on? And then, like, he gets killed, too. And I don't know. It's just very confusing. So Steven Seagal at this point, mind you, he just woke up from a coma, but he somehow like gets himself into the elevator.
Yeah, I mean he is feigning limb atrophy pretty well. Like he isn't really able to sit up or walk or anything.
Right, he gets himself into the elevator, but then like so earlier, like first thing when he woke up, he told like Kelly LeBrock, he's like, "You got to get me out of here." Blah 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 blah. And she doesn't believe him,
right?
But then she finds like the dead security guard and physical therapist guy, and she believes him. So she catches up with him, and she's like pushing him out of the hospital, and like the fake doctor guy is chasing after him, and I thought it was really funny that he crashes into like a janitor. And they both get up and like instead of like going after Steven Seagal, he takes the time to like punch the janitor in the face. And I'm like, just go after Steven Seagal. Like you ran into this guy. It's kind of your fault.
Yeah, he's got a job to do and he's really doing a bad job of it. It's pretty terrible.
So Kelly LeBrock, she helps Steven Seagal escape. He kind of passes out again. He wakes up. He's in this really nice house. Oh, there's a horse.
I love how so far it's we're two for two. Some kind of Japanese influence. There's always got to be something Japanese going on with Steven Seagal. They just happen to be in a house that has a lot of Japanese decor.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And we come to find out that Kelly LeBrock is like house sitting. For some people.
For another doctor.
Right. So he walks by the TV. And so, okay. Circling back to the beginning when he's listening to the conversation, and now Senator Trent is like talking about how like, he says, like, oh, you kill this person and you'll get money now and more when I'm in office. He's like, and is it like, you can take that to the bank or something? Is that his line?
Yeah, you can take that to the bank. That's what he says to whatever the gangster is. I can't think of his name is.
Calabrese.
Calabrese. That's what he says. You can take that to the bank.
And, like, Steven Seagal hears that on the TV and, like, an ad, and he's kind of like, but he doesn't quite put it together yet, right?
Because he didn't see the face of the person that was at that meeting.
Right.
He just heard the voice.
Well,
he was running at the time.
I would like to clarify that they make you think he doesn't see the face, but then at the end of the movie, when they reveal the footage from the VHS tape, the senator walks out into the light and you see his face in plain daylight.
Well, I think the camera was still on, but he was turning to run at the time, so we didn't actually see him.
All right. Well, okay. And then, like, okay. This is kind of confusing. So, like, Senator Trent basically puts out, like, bad news stories that it was, like, Steven Seagal that killed all the people in the hospital. That, like, I guess he woke up from a coma and started killing people.
We missed something. So, when he got killed, or when they broke into his house, when the cops broke into his house in 83, they planted a bunch of drugs and stuff and made it look like a murder-suicide is what they called it.
Okay.
So, he's already been framed for that. and been labeled a corrupt cop and, you know, a drug addict and all that stuff. So he, that's how the public perceived him at that time.
Okay.
So now the doctor or the senator is sort of perpetuating that and saying, yeah, he's really a criminal who murdered all these people and escaped.
Okay. And I like the idea that Steven Seagal is watching like the news report where the guy's talking about this. And then he's just like on the phone and he's like, yeah, get me that guy on the phone.
Yeah.
It's like if someone is like, yeah, give me Mort Krim on the phone. And then like you were talking to him.
Right. Which although I guess if you're calling in, you're saying you're Mason Storm, maybe they'd probably listen.
Yeah, maybe. So he finally, oh, we should mention that he has a huge beard.
Huge,
we didn't mention that.
Weird beard.
Gigantic beard at this point. So he shaves off the beard. He reads a news articles about his family's murder. And then we get like a montage of him getting healing up and getting like back into shape. And then we get a brief break. So in between, there's like two montages of him like getting back into shape. But in the middle, we get a scene where Kelly LeBrock is trying to track down O'Malley, and she goes to like this old person's home, and she talks to, well, what we find out is O'Malley's mom, but like she pretends like she doesn't know. Very confused.
Yeah, she pretends because she wants to protect O'Malley, I guess, because O'Malley retired. And is sort of off the grid, so to speak.
Well, yeah, we'll find out more about that in a second here.
Right.
So anyway, so yeah, he goes and visits this old lady. Then there's more montage of him getting back into shape. Then him and Kelly LeBrock go to the Bone Zone. I think they do, yeah. But they don't. Yeah. So then Steven Seagal goes and visits his wife's grave. And Kelly LeBrock goes to see her nurse friend. But finds out she's dead. I guess one of the things I read is that there was a scene that they cut where it was about like her nurse friend getting like tortured and murdered or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know because they were looking for Kelly LeBrock to try and get to Mason Storm, and you know, so they went to her apartment and found her friend and all that stuff.
Yeah. So then O'Malley goes and he meets with Steven Seagal at Kelly LeBrock's house because that's when they reveal that the old lady that Kelly LeBrock talked to was O'Malley's mom, right?
Yeah.
And that's when we find out that Steven Seagal's son is alive still, and that he lives with O'Malley, and that O'Malley's been raising him. And basically the explanation as to why he retired is that someone, he was like investigating Steven Seagal's like the crime and trying to figure out what happened and blah, 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 blah. And someone tried to kill O'Malley's mom and was like, hey, you got to drop the case. So he dropped the case and he retired.
Yes.
And then that's when Steven Seagal finally puts together that it was Senator Trent on the video from 7 years ago. He keeps thinking about that. You can take that to the bank, and somehow he like finally
pieces the two together. Yeah.
Yeah. So then the bad guys show up at Kelly LeBrock's house, and there's
they show up because
they follow her from.
Oh, that's
they follow her from her friend's apartment.
That's right.
Old apartment. Yeah. And Steven Seagal kills a bunch of them, blah, blah, blah. And then at one point he like randomly has a grenade that he throws and blows
yeah.
at some guys.
I don't know where he got the grenade from.
And I also like, they get in a Jeep to leave. And I legit laughed out loud when he like runs over those guys in
yes.
the Jeep. Cause it's like, move out of the way. Like they had time to get out of the way, but, and then like, this whole movie doesn't make sense, but there's a really confusing scene where like he pulls up to like this random like gang, I guess, with a car, and they trade the Jeep for the car.
Well, it's a car that clearly is not functioning well. It's got something wrong with it. And then they pull up in the Jeep, which has been shot up.
Yeah.
And he talks to the one guy in, you know, apparently knows the hip lingo now from 7 years later is all of a sudden picked up on it. And, you know, and they trade cars. The guy that he gets the car from knows the other car's, you know, wanted. He's like, he just takes it anyway. And they take whatever the other car is and drive off.
But it's why? But why though?
So they can't track the car. They don't know that he switched cars.
But, like, the Jeep is all messed up, though, right?
Right. But it's got her license plate on it. They can track it that way. If he switches cars, they can't, like, put an APB out and track somebody. They don't know what he's driving at that point.
All right. Well, I was confused by that whole exchange. So then they go back to Steven Seagal's old house, and he retrieves the videotape from, like, the hole in the wall where he hit it.
Yeah, they pretend to be real estate agents.
Yeah.
And distract the lady. Well, apparently they're doing some construction, and Steven Seagal rips a hole in the wall and pulls the security cam or the video camera out from behind the hole in the wall. So, and then just leaves it and they walk out.
So I have a lot of questions about this movie, but here's the biggest question. When Steven Seagal is talking to O'Malley, and O'Malley's talking about how he's been, like, his son's alive and he's been raising him, he's like, he's at this school. Steven Seagal's like, get him out of the school. Why? Why didn't they just leave the kid in the school?
Right.
Like, they didn't think Steven Seagal's kid was alive. They had no idea he was living with O'Malley, no idea he was at the school. Why does he get him out of the school?
I don't know. The school seems like the safest place for him.
Exactly.
He's in a different name. He's at a public place.
Right. The safest place for a person that
is presumed dead.
Yeah. The bad guys don't know alive is a place that they don't know where he's at. Like, it's other than they're like, well, we want to drag his son into the, like, end of this movie. It makes zero sense.
Yeah. There's no motivation for bringing him out.
So, okay. So Steven Seagal is like, hey, we got the tape. Meet us at this specific hotel. And then I was so confused by this hotel because outside of the hotel, there's a mariachi band playing.
Yes.
But then they go inside and there's like a steel drum band playing.
It's real weird. It's multicultural night there at the hotel.
Like, that was like the most baffling thing to me about this whole movie was what was going on at this hotel. So then, like, the cops show up, or maybe the crooked cops, I don't know. They show up at the hotel, and Steven Seagal beats up some guys. They steal a car and they get chased by a bunch of cops. The bad guys find O'Malley and they kill O'Malley, I guess, at the train station. He gets a very unceremonial and what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah, death. Like, he gets shot.
Well, he's protecting Steven Seagal's son. He's telling him to run. He gives him the tape and tells him to run. And basically, like, distracts him and takes the bullets for the kid.
So he's dead. And then Steven Seagal ends up, like, runs down and chases down the guys that are trying to get his son, and he saves his son. then he goes, so he saves his son, and his son is hanging out with Kelly LeBrock, but he goes to Senator Trent's house to, like, get Senator Trent. And I like when he finally kills, like, cause every time he kills one of the three people that, like, murdered his wife, he has, like, a flashback to him.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how he recognizes all of them because they're all wearing masks at the time.
Yeah, I think he pieced it together that it was those cops.
But I like when he kills the last guy, possibly by stabbing him with, like, a broken pool cue.
Yeah, broken pool cue right into his neck.
He says, "That's for my wife. Fuck you and die."
Greatest line ever. That is such a great line. Like, he doesn't even say it in a silly fashion. He just says, "That's for my wife. Fuck you and die." And that's it. Like, it is the greatest acting moment of his career.
Yeah. "That's for my wife. Fuck you and die." So he takes out some more dudes. And then my favorite, like, okay, this movie, I was dying at this point because, like, he kills all these guys, and then apparently he takes all this time to write all these messages on the wall.
Yeah. He sets it up, like, he makes it real.
He, like,
real
writes one on the, like, on the inside of, like, the toilet seat, yep. And, like, on the wall, and they're,
he's
like,
"I know where he's gonna look, inside the toilet."
And it's like he's, like, taunting Senator Trent. It's so weird. He ends up, like, capturing Trent finally. He makes a joke about his dick being small, and he's gonna kill him, but then he doesn't kill him, and like all the cops show up and they're like, "It's cool, Mason Storm. We know that you were set up because we got the video. And even though we never showed it earlier, the senator's face is clearly on the video." And they arrest Trent, and that's basically the end, right?
Yeah. Then they walk out, all three of them, like, and Sonny stops short of saying, "Are you my new mommy?"
Sonny, that's right.
It's weird.
Yeah. But, yeah, I just, like, I was literally laughing so hard, about the scene with the, with all the writing on the wall and the toilet yeah, seat and stuff like that.
He really took his time with that. I do not have any role reversals, surprisingly.
Okay.
Let's see. Kelly LeBrock and Steven Seagal stayed married until 96. There's that.
I'm trying to see if I have anything else for you.
He's got 7 kids.
The inside of the mansion that they filmed in was also used for Big Lebowski.
Yep.
So that's something.
I saw a lot of facts about the gun he was using.
Yeah, there was a lot written about that.
We can just rate this thing.
Let's be honest. We knew going into this, this is going to be a short episode. Sorry, guys.
It's fine. We're going to rate it, and we'll go from there. We got other things to do.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I'll go first this time.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, there's a lot of weird things that happen in this movie that don't make sense. And I get the feeling from what I was reading that a lot of it had to do with Warner Brothers wanting to cut this movie down to 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So I feel like my gut's telling me that there were several scenes that were cut that would have made this movie make a little bit more sense. I don't know how much that would have helped it, but I get the feeling that it would have helped at least a little bit. I don't mind the acting in this. It's not great, but it's really, you know, it's not bad. It's pretty on par for a Steven Seagal movie. There are some really good lines in this movie, and there's some really ridiculously bad lines in this movie.
Would you say one of the great ones is, "That's for my wife, fuck you and die"?
That's the best line in the movie, easily. You know, it's watchable. The movie's entertaining, you know, most of the time. It's fine. I'll go 2.5 machine guns.
2.5?
Right down the middle.
Okay. Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you said. Yeah, it's nothing special. But it's not terrible. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like I feel like if you were to put a gun to my head, I couldn't really explain the plot points, the difference between this and Above the Law, and probably the other two. And that's probably why you confuse it with the other ones. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like a classic, like, you know, 90s, late 80s, early 90s, like action movie. So. And I don't have a problem with the acting. I feel like there could be a little more action in it. That's the only thing maybe I was kind of hoping for.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like they kind of force in that scene of Steven Seagal, like, beating up the people in the party store. Because it's like, he doesn't, yeah. But overall, it was fine. I'll go the same with you, right down the middle. 2.5 machine guns. Okay. It's fine. I would probably never watch it again, but.
Yeah, I'm good never seeing this one again either.
But you're right. That line is pretty, pretty great. That's awesome. The one thing to remember about this episode is, "That's for my wife. Fuck you and die."
If I could make that the tagline of the episode when I post it, I would.
Well, you could. You just had to like bleep it out so it doesn't actually spell out. You just put like F and then like some asterisks. And
maybe
stuff.
I will do that. Yeah.
Or if Glitch could still make us like emoticons or whatever you call them.
Yeah. Emojis.
Yeah.
Emoticons. Yeah.
Yeah, So, but yeah, no, this movie's fine. It's nothing great. It's nothing terrible. I can't necessarily say run out and see it, but
right,
it's fine. I had to rent it, which was a real kick in the crotch. So
yeah, I bought it for $2.
Oh, you did your scam?
Uh-huh.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. Speaking of things that are awful and terrible,
it is time for the second spin of the Wheel of Pain. As everyone knows, we spun last week, and we are doing Cross Wars. So now it's time for spin number two. I have shared my screen with LBJ. LBJ, are you ready?
Did you take Cross Wars off?
Cross Wars is off the wheel. What are you still hoping doesn't come up? Is it still Dragon Ball Evolution?
Yeah, that one, or...
I feel like you're really hoping Transformers Revenge of the Fallen doesn't come up.
I hate that movie, too.
I mean, there's nothing great on here.
There's nothing great.
I have to say, everyone...
I feel like Hercules in New York is going to be real bad, like a real tough watch. Like, not just bad, like it's going to be hard to watch it.
I will say everybody thank you to everyone that suggested movies. Everyone did a great job picking terrible movies for us.
Don't thank them. Let's not encourage people.
All right. I'm going to spin. You ready?
Yeah.
The wheel is spinning. And we are doing a movie called Mortal Challenge. I do not know what this is. Do you, LPJ?
I looked it up the first time around. I don't remember what it is or who suggested it. I will find out right now. I'm looking.
Says, a private investigator rescues youths who have been forced into combat with cyborgs.
Who suggested this? I got to find this out now. Mortal Challenge. This was a pick from, nope, that's not it. I had it here. Oh, the Town Crier. Thank you, Town Crier.
I'm looking now. We might have an issue. I'm trying to see if it's actually anywhere that we can watch it. LPJ, help me out here. See
I'm
if
looking
you,
right now.
See if you see.
Mortal Challenge, a.k.a. Death Game. Oh, I remember the cover of this box. Oh, I don't know if it's available.
Because I'm only looking, it seems like the DVD is available, but I don't see it as far as like streaming.
It is not streaming anywhere. Oh, wait, hold on.
Okay.
No, that's not it. I thought maybe it was on YouTube.
Yeah, I was looking to see if it was on YouTube too, but it doesn't look like it. Should I spin again?
I think we're going to have to because we can't watch it. Obviously, we can't watch it.
All right, well.
Man. I was looking forward to that bad of a movie, actually.
Well, I'm going to spin again, okay?
Sorry, Town Crier. Yeah, all right, go ahead.
Spinning again.
Oh! maybe this one isn't streaming.
No, it you know what? It's on Stars. I just saw today.
God.
Speed 2. Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Oh, who suggested that?
Which is, it's funny because I'm glad we're doing it. I was going to suggest that this be the last movie we ever cover.
Speed 2?
Yeah, because the first movie you ever did was Speed. But, yeah, so Speed 2 is the other movie we're doing in the Wheel of Pain.
All right, who suggested Speed 2?
I don't know.
I'm looking right now. I had to get past all those OJ conversations we had. I don't have it yet. No. Huh. Maybe somebody didn't actually suggest Speed 2 and you just did.
No, somebody did. It was like the last suggestion we got.
Was it?
Yeah, I'm gonna. Do I have to pull it up for you? I'm you're going too far back, dude.
I'm looking right here. Hold on. It's from Matthew Hearn.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Matt. All right, Speed 2, Cruise Control. I've never seen this movie.
I haven't either.
All right, well, we'll see how it goes. I got nothing to say. Like, I'm dumbfounded by this whole process.
I got to be honest with you. I'm kind of sad that we're not doing the Dragon Ball Evolution.
You can always suggest it later.
Yeah, that's true.
Keep the list. Keep the list. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, keep the list. I'll keep the list. Okay, plugs. I'm going to plug Tubi, as I always do. A lot of free content on there, free movies, some ads, nothing too major. Is there anything else I want to plug?
There was something you wanted to plug last time that you forgot.
Yeah, and I still haven't thought of what it was. So why don't you do your plug, and if I happen to think of it in like 30 seconds here, I'll say it.
Sure, my plug was, it's always Discord. Join the Discord. It is the greatest and worst thing that's ever happened to us, for a number of reasons. But you can chat with us. If you go to Instagram, our Instagram is just, Last Action Podcast. You can find the link to our Discord, and we can, we can chat with you. We can yell at you, which is what I typically do. I usually express my disappointment in our fans on Discord, and I curse most of you. Because you're usually awful human beings, and that's how it goes. That's our audience. Our audience is the dregs of the world, I feel like.
I feel like you're just really upset about this whole Wheel of Pain thing. But
again, I did not endorse it. I got forced into it, and here I am, stuck.
I feel like it could have been a lot worse, to be honest with you.
It could have been a lot worse. You're right. It could have been Mortal Challenge.
So here's the thing. I don't remember what else I was going to plug, so let's just put a pin in this.
Okay, that's fine. I'm good. This episode of the Last Action Podcast has been terminated.
But we'll be back.